Hey everybody, it's JT. What is on your holiday meal shopping list? Well, I would suggest Painted Hills Natural Beef. It is some of the best beef in the world. And your friends and family will be thanking you for a long time if you serve Painted Hills Natural Beef for your holiday meals. And now you can buy it online just by going to PaintedHillsBeef.com. Use the code BBQNATION at checkout and save yourself 15% on your order. Give Painted Hills Natural Beef a place on your table this holiday season.
It's Barbecue Nation with JT on a Northwest Lifestyle Weekend. Now here's JT.
Hey everybody, welcome to Barbecue Nation. I'm JT along with my second in command, Dr. Dave, who's still trying to recover from being down at Daytona. I think his head's just on a swivel or something, just watching those cars always go to the left down there. Anyway, we are in the Turn It, Don't Burn It studios here in downtown Portland. Are you a true carnivore? I mean, I know I am. There's no doubt about that. If you are, we have a real treat for you today on the Nation. We've got Jess Prilis, originally from Down Under in Australia, where people are actually standing upside down. At least I was for many of my trips down there. And Jess currently resides in Texas, and she's got a brand new cookbook out here called Hardcore Carnivore. It just came out this week, actually, a couple days ago. And we'll be talking to Jess here in a minute or two. And this week's music in honor of Jess, which she won't get to hear this until the show's finished, we're going to do Little River Band and Bob Wills. That's a hell of a combination for you. I mean, that's like having pancakes and caviar for breakfast or something. I don't know. Anyway, Jess Prilis, welcome to the show, my dear.
Thank you. That's one of my favorite ever intros, I think. And I thought, oh gosh, is it going to be Midnight Oil? Is it going to be, I come from a land down under. So I'm glad that you went for something left of center with Little River Band.
There you go. Well, I was a rock and roll DJ in college many years ago. And loved them.
So you've got all of the experience in great classic rock.
Yes, I do. Unfortunately, and it's still going in my head. At least my wife says that sometimes. So what? Okay, let's kind of start from the beginning. We've got quite a while here to fill up. So in Australia, what prompted you to start cooking down under? No pun intended. Well, actually, pun intended. But you didn't just jump to Texas and become a barbecue expert. You had to learn this stuff and have a real visceral interest in it. So give us your backstory.
Yeah. And, for me, the theory came before the practice. And it started when I was visiting Texas. My first trip here was about 10 or 11 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
And I had my first taste of Texas barbecue, and it was just, we didn't have smoked meats in Australia at the time. Now the low and slow scene in Australia is exploding, and I'm sure we can talk about that later. But I had that first taste, and it just never tasted anything like that. The beef, it was a beef rib, so it was the beefiness and the rendered fat and the heavy pepper and the smoke. And it's something that I'm sure you and your viewers have all experienced and love. But if you can just try and imagine what that's like for the very first time as a fully formed adult palate as well, never having had that.
Yes.
And so I became fascinated with, I just enjoyed barbecue, so I kept eating more of it. And at the same time, I kind of fell in love with Texas. So I decided to come over more frequently. And every time I would come over, I would try and eat more and then learn more, because I sort of thought, wow, this is interesting, and why isn't a brisket in Australia the same? So I sort of fell down this rabbit hole, of while trying to figure out why proteins are different between the countries, discovering butchery and breed and all these different variables. So I started getting this inadvertent meat education. And that then led to a natural desire. People were asking me to talk about it back in Australia, and I knew enough about it, and I'd worked with pitmasters, and I understood the process, that I started to kind of be a missionary for barbecue back home. And at some stage in the journey, it was like, well, I should probably also try my hand at actually cooking it, not just know all the facts about it. And that's how I started to kind of cook. And at the same time, I mean, I'd always enjoyed cooking. I'd certainly always enjoyed eating. I apply the knowledge that I'd learned to general meat cookery too. So it learning all that stuff, particularly about beef, allowed me to understand what I was buying in a steak, how I was cooking it, you know, how to deal with charcoal. So yes, I had this barbecue renaissance, but it helped my meat cookery in general, and that's why I kind of, you know, go by Hardcore Carnivore, because for me, it's the meat, not the method. It's about the understanding the protein and the raw ingredient that you're cooking with, and then you can get into all these fun and different ways to cook it. But that's kind of how it started, and it got to the point where I was traveling to Texas twice a year, and it was getting ridiculous, and I thought it's probably just time to make the leap and become a full-time Tex-Australian. So I ended up moving or emigrating 3 years ago now, and it's definitely home for me now.
I was just wondering before we did the show and actually driving into the studio this morning of how the combination of a Texas accent and an Australian accent is going to work out for you down the road. Cause you're still fairly new, but you're to Texas. I mean, and I've spent a hell of a lot of time in Texas, but I'm just curious when I talk to you 4 years from now, how your accent's going to be. I mean, that's just a matter of curiosity.
I think it's going to be exactly as it is. And, you know, much to my chagrin, and not in this context, but my accent is a constant source of discussion online, like on my social media. And the Australians are like, you sound like a Yank. And the Americans are, you kind of sound like a Texan, you kind of sound like an Australian. And the thing is, I chalk it up to this because I've had to kind of come up with an approach to it, but I've always had an ear for languages. You know, when I did French in high school, I had a fairly decent French accent. And when I order Mexican food, you know, I don't sound too much off the original pronunciation and how it's intended. And I think that when you first change your accent so that you're understood, because there's certain words that if I went full Australian, no one would know what I was talking about. So you do it naturally. And then as you live somewhere, you hear it, when you have an ear for languages, you hear the language and you parrot back what you're hearing. So there will always be words that I pronounce with an Australian accent because that's
who you are.
It's my ear.
Yes.
Yes. And it's who I am and it's natural to me. So as I'm talking to you now, there's nothing that's forced. There's nothing that's put on. This is just how I sound because I'm speaking to an American. If I got on the phone to, like, my parents, for example, I would fall back into full Australian. And it was very confusing on the weekend because I was in Houston where we, as the Australasian Barbecue Alliance, were given berths to send two teams to compete at the rodeo. And so I was there as an ambassador, and I had my Australian team with me, and then I had my Texan ambassador host. So I would look at the Australians and speak to them in a very heavy Aussie accent, and then I would turn around to the Texans and speak to them as I would normally speak to them, and it just happens automatically. So I'm sure that somewhere down the line I'm going to be able to meet a professor that will be able to talk to me about why this happens, but I can go on record to tell you that none of it is forced or assumed. It's just how I speak right now. So my guess is that I'll sound like this in 4 years too.
Okay. Well, I believe you because like I said, before we, started, the show, I've been to Australia, a few times, enjoyed my, time and just about the time I was leaving, on the second trip and then on the third trip, I was starting to understand some of the vernacular and, it was, you know, but I'd spent enough time in the bars down there at the end of the day to really, you know, train my ear for it. But it's I just had so much fun. Anyway, we're not supposed to spend too much time talking about Australia, but my show and we can do what we want. We are going to take a break. We're going to be back with Jess Prilis in her new book. We're going to be talking about next coming up. Hardcore Carnivore just came out. And we'll be back here on The Nation right after this. Don't go away.
I'll come in, Leon Brown. Tell me. Deep within my heart lies a melody.
a song of old San Antone.
San Antone.
Where in dreams I live with a memory. Beneath the stars all alone.
Yes, go on.
It was there I found beside the Alamo. Enchantment strange as a blue up above.
I hear you, my boy.
The paths that only she would know. Still hears my broken song of love. Moon in all your splendor. No, only my heart. Call back my rose, rose of San Antone. Lips so sweet and tender.
Hey, welcome back to Barbecue Nation. I'm JT, along with Dr. Dave, and we've got Jess Prilis with us. Recently converted to Texianism from Australianism, and now she's Texstralian. I really like that you came up with that. If you'd like to email us, you can do it at Barbecue Nation. That's bbqnation@kxl.com. You can also check us out on Facebook, which is Barbecue Nation with JT. Twitter is CowCook57. In all the social media platforms, believe me, we've got our fingers in it somehow. So let's welcome back Jess Prilis.
Thank you.
How were you received when you first came to Texas? Was it more as you were a curious person and then they found out that you were very serious about this? Because if you were hanging around, you know, the Texas A&M and some of those programs, their barbecue camps and stuff. I mean, they had to think you were being serious.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think, first of all, everybody continues to learn, no matter what stage that we're at.
Sure.
And so, obviously, like, people who have been part of my journey since the beginning will have seen my own personal growth and understanding what I've learned and you know, expertise and that whole concept can always be added to. I suppose, I mean, serious, you know, Texans accepted me, and mainly it started for me as an online community that I'd curated. Texans love anyone who loves Texas as much as they do. So if you come over and show interest in, you know, the hallmarks of Texas life, barbecue and trucks and hunting and, you know, celebrating Texas Independence Day and all of that good stuff, that fun stuff, they will hold you with one of their own.
Sure.
So that's sort of what happened initially in terms of people paying attention to what I was doing. But I've never had anybody, say, well, you can't tell us what to do because you're a woman, or you're Australian, or whatever it is. It's just the reception has been nothing but open arms and warmth.
Good. Good. Good for you. Good for them, actually. So let's talk about your book, Hardcore Carnivore. What prompted you to actually get in and write this? I've written a book. I know how tough it can be. It's a tedious process at best some days. Some days it's very rewarding. But what prompted you to jump in and do one of these?
I was on a barbecue show in Australia as a judge. And, yeah, I had already started to kind of hold the title of, you know, barbecue queen.
Sure.
That was not self-crowned. That's, I guess, a moniker that the media like to assign. I got barbecue empress the other day, which was a nice upgrade. But I was doing a lot of, I was the media go-to for Low and Slow in Australia at the time. And I did this show, and off the back of that, there had been people down there that were following my career, scouts for publishers and what have you. And I actually got approached, and they sort of said, look, we think it's time. We think it's time for you to start putting something out in print, not just online, because I obviously had been publishing recipes to my website for a little while.
Sure.
And ended up signing with an Australian publisher, Murdoch Books. You might have heard that name before.
Oh, so once
luckily,
or twice. Yeah.
So they're quite a big publisher in Australia. And the book came out last year in Australia, UK, and New Zealand. But, of course, given that it was an Australian publisher, they then had to negotiate for the rights to the U.S. So that's why people sort of ask why there's been a gap. And the biggest thing for me was that being the publishing industry is so unusual and different. And it's been really difficult to try and explain to people without kind of letting them know too much of the business side of things, or boring them, like why there has been a delay. And it was also difficult because the book did come out in Australia, but now the majority of my audience are American-based. So I couldn't, you know, there's not really a lot of point pushing something that's not available to the majority of your customer base. So I'm just so grateful that the book is finally out in the U.S. because now it's available to nearly everybody that follows me, and I can just, you know, push hard and make that statement. But I ended up signing with Murdoch, and I had a very short amount of time to do the book. And there were also a few recipes that, it was a handful, but recipes that were already published on the website that I insisted had to be in the book if it was going to be a general coverall, like how to make your own bacon, for example.
Sure.
So I handed in the manuscript, and I'm used to doing everything myself. I'm used to writing the recipes, doing the proofreading, doing my own cooking, photography, and food styling. And so to work with an editor was a really interesting process, and pretty different for someone who's a control freak. But we ended up flying down to Australia. It was actually when the last U.S. election was, when we shot the book. And I had 8 days to shoot 80 dishes. There's over 100 recipes in the book, and we got about 80 photos in there. We had this great photographer, Mark Roper, and Lee Blaylock, food stylist. So I had a team with me, but it was a photography studio, not a kitchen. And I didn't have, like, any of the cool props that I have. I mean, my home was now in Texas, but, you know.
Right.
So I'm flying back to Australia with, like, suitcases full of, like, grill grates and hardcore carnivore rub and thermopens and just, like, basic stuff, thinking, oh, my gosh, what am I going to find there? And I had to have a friend of mine who was living in Australia at the time and beg him to say, hey, can you please bring your smoker down to this tiny courtyard at this studio? And honestly, I think that was one of the biggest professional challenges ever for me, that I showed up, they had an induction cooktop. I'd never cooked on induction before. And if you haven't, it's so different to cooking on gas.
Mm-hmm.
And to be asked to cook the best version of all these dishes that are to represent you in perpetuity in print in 8 days in a kitchen you've never been in before with equipment you've never used before, that was like my own personal Iron Chef. So I think given how beautiful the book turned out, that was a challenge that I can tick off and say it was passed.
Yes, it was. We're going to take another break. We have to, because we're up against a heartbreak. But we'll be back with Jess Pryor. Let's talk more about her new book, Hardcore Carnivore, right here on The Nation. Don't go away.
Big balls in Cowtown, we'll all go down. Big balls in Cowtown, we'll dance around. Missing, it's the time that I spend alone, sailing on the cool and bright clear water.
Welcome back to Barbecue Nation. I would be JT, and we've got Ms. Ms. Okay, Jess Pryor with us today. She's just got a new book out in the States. It's been out for a while in Australia, Hardcore Carnivore. But again, if you'd like to email us, it's barbecuenation@kxl.com, recipes@kxl.com. Pretty much send anything to kxl.com and they'll get it to me. Anyway, so what was your process in actually selecting the recipes for the book?
that's a great question. I knew that I was going to split the chapters into different proteins. So the book's actually divided into a forequarter and a hindquarter, and the forequarter is information and tips and tricks to make you a better meat cook. So understanding the alchemy of salt and the importance of temperature and how to set up a zone for grill for two-zone cooking and how to spatchcock a chicken, et cetera, et cetera. And then the hindquarter of the recipes. So I knew that the hindquarter would be split into, you know, chicken, game, lamb, beef, pork, sides. And we also have a section called foundation and finishes, which are like stocks, rubs, sauces, et cetera.
Right.
And then it was for me, okay, the tagline of this book is cook meat like you mean it. So it has to be, it's a book for people who know they like to cook and who are know they're serious carnivores, but who maybe want to take it to the next level. And that's a pretty big spectrum because maybe it is someone who's just starting out and maybe it's someone who already thinks they can cook the perfect steak. So how do you cater to all that? So first, my recipes are kind of peppered with me having lived in Texas for a little while. They've got a little bit of a Tex-Mex flair. A lot of, you know, there's quite a few Texan recipes in there. There's quite a few Tex-Mexy kind of chili southern dishes in there. And one or two little Australian twists. But it had to be something where they were functional recipes where this cookbook can live in your kitchen and you will use most of it. What I didn't want to do was kind of get into the area of cooking weird cuts and offal and stomach lining and heart just to prove that it was a carnivore's book because I don't think that that's as useful to people. So there's basic things in there like the best chicken fried steak recipe and here's a smash burger and here's a steakhouse burger. And then there's more advanced things like a stuffed venison loin or, you know, cider brine pork chops and things like that. So it's meant to be, there's a couple of smoking recipes too, of course, because it would be remiss not to have them. But just as I mentioned earlier, it's about the meat, not the method. So I didn't want to force people to buy a book that they would only be able to use when they have access to a smoker or that they have a smoker or that they live in an area where they can cook outdoors on a frequent basis. So it was about really accessible recipes with a few more unusual and challenging ones peppered in there for those who are a bit more adventurous.
Let's jump back just a second. You were talking in our first segment about the difference between the meat that you discovered in Texas, so on and so forth, what you were used to in Australia. Did you, when you were doing your recipes, did you have to change your recipes at all, Australia version of the book versus Texas? Because we've got a lot more, you know, marbling in our beef up here. From at least what I can remember, the meat I ate in Australia, which was great, but we have various grades and so on. Did you have to make any adaptations for that?
So I will say in defense of Australia, we have, in fact, Australian beef has won the Best Beef in the World Challenge. There's an international competition of the best steak in the world, something like that. There's tremendous Australian steak. There's fabulous American beef. It just depends where you go
right.
and what you ask for. The issue that I was experiencing when I was trying to kind of like be a missionary or a translator for barbecue was that the animals used to be smaller in Australia. They used to harvest them earlier, and the cuts were different. So if you wanted a brisket, butchered closer to the British style, which was a completely denuded and fat-free, completely trimmed brisket flat only. So that's gotten better. What I had to do for the book is certainly there are different names of cuts. So the original version, the Australian UK version, says something like for example, a porterhouse in Australia, a porterhouse and a sirloin in Australia are the same steak, which is actually New York strip over here.
Right.
So there were a few times that there would be like a little, and there's still in the book, like these little kind of like FAQ tip boxes. The Australian version, you can't get cornmeal easily in Australia. So for example, the cornbread recipe says, if you can't find cornmeal, use polenta. So when we came to do the American version, a couple of things changed. First of all, I was lucky enough to have Tuffy Stone write the foreword for the American version, which was just a complete honor that I still kind of can't believe I was lucky enough to have that happen. But we changed things like the substitutions, exactly what you're saying. We could take those out again. But the original book still had Fahrenheit and Celsius and grams and cups and ounces. And it's pretty standard for cookbooks to be written to be world-friendly these days. The other thing is, you know, and this is how quickly time can march on. There's a section in there about know your smokers, and it goes through the different types of smokers. And at the time, in between writing the Australian version and editing the American version, I signed a deal with Pitts and Spitz, where I've designed and now have my own JP Signature Edition offset cooker that's made in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
So the Australian artist that did the little cartoons for the smokers was kind enough to actually create a cartoon version of my smoker. So the American book has, the U.S. edition has my actual smoker in it. Instead of just a general offset. Yeah, so these details probably won't matter to most of everybody, but you know, when you sink your heart, soul, and sanity into a project like this, you're hyper aware of all of the little differences.
Yeah, you become kind of, and I don't want to, well, super sensitive would not be a good term, but like you say, you're really tuned in and focused.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
even the littlest minutia of things, it's okay. You know, you want to make sure it's correct. It's
exactly.
Yeah, having been through that process, it's drive you nuts at some point.
It can. I'm kind of lucky that I had such a short deadline, because even though it put major stress on delivering, it was a shorter period of insanity.
Yes. One of the recipes that you've got is your grilled oysters. Now, I'm gonna. We've only got a couple minutes before we got to go to break, but I wanted to tell you. I had the best grilled oysters that I ever had in Australia. We did them out on a grill. We took them out. We rinsed them. They put almost kind of like a Rockefeller in a way, with some Worcestershire and some what they called bacon, which is we would call Canadian bacon at the time.
Yeah, I bet you there were oysters Kilpatrick is what we called them.
I don't know, but they were damn good. And I've made them a couple times a year ever since then. And to tell you the truth, I'm not a huge oyster fan, but I'll eat those things all day.
Yeah, it's called Oysters Kilpatrick, if anyone's interested in kind of Googling for the recipe. It's a very Australian way to prepare them. I like mine kind of brinier flavored, which is why you saw that recipe on my website, because there's no actual seafood in the book, I should clarify. But I do that with the kombu and like a dashi butter, so it's got seaweed
right.
And bonito flakes and that kind of briny flavor. But I'll eat them raw all day long.
Oh, yeah, they were good. And we had a great time eating those. And when they showed me how to do it, because they put some green onions, chopped little green onions on it and that,
mm-hmm.
and the bacon, and then we actually put a little Parmesan on it to kind of finish it off. And if I remember correctly, and it was really good. We're going to
sounds great. You're making me hungry.
Well, that's my job. So we're going to take a break. We're going to come back and finish up the show with Jess Prilis. Talk some more about her new book, Hardcore Carnivore, right after this on Barbecue Nation. How about that?
Time for cool change. Know that it's time for a cool change. And now that my life is so prearranged, I know that it's time for a cool change.
Hey, welcome back to the Nation. Just want to remind you to turn it, don't burn it, first of all. That's kind of our motto around here. But secondly, check out our website. Check out my website. It's being redone right now, but I think you can still get to it, thecowboycook.com. Check out Jess Prilis' website or sites, because I notice you're kind of all over social media, which is a cool thing. And her new book, Hardcore Carnivore, U.S. version. How's that? which just came out this week. What do you see down the road for you? I mean, releasing a book, doing the stuff you're doing, being the ambassadors, traveling back and forth between Australia and the States once in a while, doing all that. What do you see coming down the road for you? Do you want to own a restaurant? Do you want to just do media? I mean, write more books? What do you think?
Well, I actually have a seasoning company called Hardcore Carnivore. So I have three different rubs out right now. A black rub that has activated charcoal in it, which kind of launched everything for me. And then there's a red version, which has been doing really well with competition barbecue. And I just released Amplify, which is more of a seasoning. It's made with chicken fat powder and it's kind of crazy, but delicious. So that is something that takes up a lot of my time. I'm really running a business at the same time as running my own thing. And still publishing recipes on my website, still doing classes and appearances. So it'll probably just continue to, grow Hardcore Carnivore and the range of things we offer to people. We've just started importing this specialty steak fork from Brazil that's really unusual. So I try and look for interesting products for the carnivore lifestyle and grow that way. So I don't know if a restaurant's on the cards. People keep asking me that all the time. But, you know, it's a tremendous amount of love that usually ends in
divorce.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I owned one once for about a month, and then. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir then. Yeah.
That's okay. It is. It is an endeavor of love if you want to own a restaurant, and it will age you quite fast, but you'll enjoy it. I can tell you that. Little footnote for you here, and my listeners have heard me say this. First time I ever had tri-tip was in Brazil. For years, they just ground the stuff up here, made it into stew meat or burger or whatever. And then in the late 80s, early 90s, it kind of took off. The folks in Southern California, though, the Santa Clarita, folks, they will tell you that they've been cooking tri-tips for 317 years. I appreciate you going out across the world and bringing in new items. I think that's very cool.
Yeah, I cooked in Brazil last year, actually, at one of those churrascada events, and I actually cooked tri-tips, but I smoked it, which they weren't used to, and so it was a great kind of mashup. But yeah, it's really, for me, it's not just about putting things out with the name on it. All of the products that I have and put under my line are very well considered and thought out, and I want them to be useful and different. So that takes time. So that's what I'll be doing.
So what do you do in your free time, real quickly?
What's that? I don't know what that is.
I thought maybe you...
I don't have free time.
Get, 18 holes of golf in like 45 minutes or something,
I turned my hobby into my job, and I'm lucky enough that I still love it, because sometimes that can be a bad decision, but so far for me it's been a great decision. But I love what I do, and I work my butt off, and it doesn't stop. It's always going. There's always something to do. There's always some people to meet, things to eat, things to learn. There's always stuff going on.
That is true. That is true. And I'm even though I don't really know you, I'm proud of you for doing what you're doing. I think it's great. I think it's...
Oh, well, thank you so much.
Absolutely priceless. Is there anything you want to do that you haven't done yet? I mean, God, you could make a list, 14 pages long, but real quickly, is there one thing that sticks out that you would like to go do somewhere?
I'm a self-taught cook, so I have always been fascinated. I'd love to kind of do a stage in a really fine dining restaurant, just to understand like techniques and equipment that we just don't have at home. I think that would just be fun, to try and be like, oh, that's master sauce, and this is what happens when it splits. And because I still have, not very frequently, but there's still the occasional kitchen disaster that comes with, learning as you go. So
yes.
I think that would be a neat thing to do.
There you go. Jess Prilis, thanks for being on The Nation today. And folks, you can check out her website at jessprilis.com. You can even order the book there, I believe. And should be on bookshelves around our broadcast area very shortly. So for Dr. Dave and everybody else and Ms. Jess, we're going to say adios for this week. And remember, like I said, turn it, don't burn it. Check out thecowboycook.com. Have a good week, everybody. See you next time.